podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Adult Improver series of Perpetual Chess. This, of course, is where we take a break from talking to some big shot author, grandmaster who won 12 titles and could play blindfold from the time they were four. And we talk to an accomplished amateur. In this case, I will be introducing our guests momentarily. First, wanted to mention a couple things. Number one, as always, I wanted to thank Perpetual Chess Patreon supporters. They help keep the podcast going. We are basically an independent entity here, so it helps a lot when people are able to support the pod. Recent Patreon subs include Blundergoat, awesome name, Anthony Burchell, Jim Duncan, Sartorius, Martin, Zach Schuster, and I believe I already shouted out John Measure last time. So thanks to you guys for supporting the pod. Of course, if you are a Patreon member, you can attend Zoom lectures. We have had a couple good ones recently from Christoph Selecki going over openings. I did one talking about my book, so on and so forth. You can also submit questions for our guests. We've got a few good questions for today's guests. Also wanted to give a shout out to our presenting chess education sponsors, chessable.com. New courses coming fast and furious, including friend of the pod, John Kabadai's My Opponent's Move, Identifying Threats, James Canty's The Meanest Job of a London. There's a new course on the modern Bernoulli if you're into such things. So just be sure to check out Chessable. And if you sign up for the lifetime membership, use the link in the description if you are able to. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest. But our guest, this is an adult improver interview, but I think it's as much about life improvement as chess improvement. We'll be discussing both. But this gentleman emailed me back in 2022. By the way, I should mention there is a form if you're interested in being featured as a adult improver guest. And as this shows, I do eventually get back to some people. Sometimes it takes me a while, but I've been excited to hear his story all along. So we'll let him tell his story. He joins us from his home in Nottingham, England. And I would just, without further ado, like to welcome Julio Calcina to the pod. Welcome, Julio.
Thank you, Ben. It's amazing and a pleasure to be here on the podcast. Amazing.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So Julio, do you remember what you wrote to me back in 2022?
Yeah, I vaguely remember certain points. The one that comes up to my head, like to start off with, is how we got into chess, or the question that you ask, how do you get into chess? And very common, my dad taught me when I was a kid. It's the same that I've like same story that I've heard for a lot of guests that you've had on the podcast when you've asked them, how did you start playing chess? It's usually the dads that teach them how to play chess. And in my case, it certainly is the exact same. So my dad taught me chess because we used to go on long drives, very long drives, driving from country to country. So I lived in Africa at the time. And I was very impatient as a child, sitting in a car for so many hours. So he decided to teach me chess. We got a little pocket-sized chess board that he would set up. Whilst he was driving, I would be making the moves. And yeah, he taught me how to play chess very long time ago. I must have been about five or six, roughly that age.
And you're 34 years of age now. So Julio, when your dad would play you, was he playing blindfold basically? How did he see the board while he was driving?
So he would just glimpse down and have a look at the quick glimpse and just make his moves from there. But I don't remember me ever beating him. And I don't remember losing either. I just remember he taught me how to play chess. I don't really have much memory of how the games went or if there was any opening discussions. And
when did it get, like, how did chess, what role did it play in your life as the years went on, Julio?
So as the years went on from when I learned how to play chess, it was just mainly for traveling purposes, just to keep me occupied, keep me busy. But I totally forgot about chess from the age of 5, 6 years old. I totally forgot about chess. I never played chess in school. And I picked it back up when I was about 19 years old, 19, 20 roughly. And for some reason, I just found a chessboard and I just knew how the pieces moved. I was like, this is strange that I know how all the pieces move, and also to know that it's a game of like, it's an intellectual game, like it's a smart man's game, as people like to say. And yeah, I just remembered how the pieces move, so I thought, you know, this might be a sign. So let me just pick it up. Let me just play some chess. And I had an iPhone at the time, so I just typed in chess in my app store, and chess.com came up. And then it's been history since then. I just started playing correspondence games, and I would stay up late nights just analyzing games before I made a move. And yeah, I only used to play correspondence games, and I started off, my rating was around 1200. I've never gone below 1200, so that was a good benchmark to start from and work my way up from there. So for the first maybe 2 years or so, I was just playing correspondence chess. And unlucky for my partners at the time, they didn't like me playing chess because I became so obsessive with the game. And yeah, I have actually lost relationships over the game over the years. Wow. Yeah, I've lost relationships.
I'm sure
over
you're not
chess.
The only. You're not the only one.
Yeah, so in general, chess has helped me a lot in terms of life and keeping me out of trouble. And I owe a lot to the game. I owe a lot to the community of chess. And all I could do in that sort of sense is just to give back in terms of, like, what helped me with chess is what I can give back to other people that may need that sort of help and guidance, and be a part of a community, get to, you know, experience a sense of belonging, acceptance from the chess community. So that's what it's given me. It's given me a sense of purpose, a sense of direction. That's without all the shenanigans that have actually happened during my chess journey, which, you know, everybody's got stories to tell when they go to tournaments. So it's served me so well. I owe so much to chess.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to diving more into what you've learned from it and the pitfalls along the way. Just to provide a few more biographical details for listeners. So you didn't mention, but you did in your email to me, you got your rating up to 2,000 daily. So yeah. Chess improvement is not necessarily the primary focus of this interview, but still, it's commendable that you've been grinding all these years, like you mentioned, like something like 15 years on chess.com daily games. And slow and steady progress is to be commended. I also should have mentioned in the intro, you've got some other interests. You're into MMA, both as a practitioner and an advisor. And you've started a business working with those with mental health challenges and learning disabilities. And you mentioned in your email to me that chess has sort of framed all of these other interests as well. So we'll be diving deeper as time goes on, Julio, but I'd love to hear sort of how chess fits in with what's otherwise a pretty busy life, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so in terms of business-wise and my career-wise, the chess improvement, I've always strived to improve myself as an individual, and chess has actually been a great tool for me to use to be able to self-reflect on my own actions and how I hold myself. And chess has actually taught me, has actually brought into awareness things about myself. Like, in terms of, I know a lot of people may experience this because I have discussed with a lot of people, about rating, about your approach to chess. And as soon as you find yourself climbing the ladder, like I found myself climbing the chess ladder when I got to like 1400, 1500, I then became, what I noticed about myself was that I became scared of going back to play games because I didn't want to lose that rating. And I realized this is an internal problem issue with myself, and it's based on attachment. And I needed to let go of that attachment, being attached to a rating, which could hinder my progress if I decided, like, oh, I'm scared of losing, going under 1500 because I've made it this far. I'm so scared of losing my rating. So it's a thing of fear and attachment. So chess has helped me highlight these aspects of myself regarding attachment and fear, and how do I go about overcoming these things. And I used to find that when I was playing a correspondence game and I get into a bit of a sticky position where, like, I don't see any way out, I don't see any hope, I know that I feel like I'm going to lose the game, and then I decided to start delaying making a move, and I'll probably make a move on maybe if I've got 10 minutes left. And then I found that doing that is like I was running away from my problems, and my game on the chessboard was mirroring what my daily life was. So if I was running away from a problem on the chessboard, in reality, in my day-to-day life, I used to run away from my problems. Like, I'll give an example. If I owed somebody some money, for example, £20, I would actually avoid seeing that person. But ultimately, the problem never goes away. You still have to face it eventually. So I could see the similar situations in my day-to-day life and on the chessboard. It was a mirror reflection of my being. So I decided to overcome this little obstacle, this barrier that I'd created in my head, and I realized no matter what problems you have that you have to face, you have to face it head on, and there's no point delaying it, because you're still gonna have to face it. So I've learned to face my problems head on, straight away, in the moment, regardless of the outcome. And being attached to an outcome like win or a loss, it can be detrimental if you don't know how to handle the loss or the win. So, like, the losses just make you scared and just make you don't want to come back or analyze the game. But there's a lot of gold to be, you know, there's a lot of great lessons to be learned from your losses. That's why they say, you know, you learn the most from your losses compared to your wins. So yeah, I owe a lot to chess. I'll keep saying that. And I love the game.
So you paid back the £20?
Oh yeah, I did. A long time ago.
All right. Glad to hear it. And this is something, what you discussed, where we become sort of overly focused on our ratings and, you know, kind of tie it to our self-worth. I mean, I think that that happens no matter what your chess experience level. So do you, Julio, in addition to it helping you outside of chess, do you feel like you've gotten better at that over the years, chess-wise?
Yeah, very much so. I've gotten so much better at it, paying so much attention to detail and not to get too attached and hung up on the outcome.
Is there anything you could advise for anyone else who struggles with that? Like, you mentioned tackling the problem head on, but, like, how do you do that?
There's no other way to tackle your problems apart from just facing it. You just rise up to the challenge and see what can be done. Look for solutions rather than staying worrying about the problem and being in a negative mindset. If something is negative, you can easily get drawn into that negative. You know, it's just like a downward spiral, basically, of negative, a chain of negative thoughts. But if you can be proactive about it, you could find solutions and change your mindset and look for the lessons in your losses or in your challenges rather than complaining, because complaining doesn't fix anything.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so you have made great progress over the years. Like, what's been your approach to your slow and steady improvement? Like, what's your preferred type of chess resource, or have you just kind of figured it out as you've gone?
Yeah, so I kind of figured it out as I went along and getting advice from other players. But what's helped me to actually improve was going in with an open mind. And what I mean by that is open to criticism, open to getting told that what you're doing is not great. So having an open mind, which allows room for improvement, compared to being stuck in your biased ways or sticking with one opening which you know won't do you great in the long run. So having an open mindset has helped me to progress in the field and learning from other players themselves. So in terms of improvement, When I started off playing chess, I just loved playing chess, but I didn't understand any strategies and stuff. And there's a YouTube channel that actually helped me improve my chess. So he's called the Backyard Chess Professor. I owe him so much because I used to, you know, I love the way he annotates his games and just discusses about chess. So for about one whole year straight, I was just watching videos on the Backyard Chess Professor. So he'd be analyzing games that grandmasters have played. You're going through Jeremy Silman's endgame books. So I have got a lot of chess books, but in terms of reading the books myself, I find it difficult. So I managed to find out my learning style, what my preferred learning style is, and that's visual and audible, or auditory. So I preferred watching videos because I learned better through watching videos. And it was a good thing that the Backyard Chess Professor was covering the Jeremy Silman's endgame book on his channel, because I've actually got the book and I did struggle to read it.
Right.
So he helped.
Although it's
me
on Chessable now too, so you can get it with video if need be. But I gotta check out the Backyard Chess Professor. It's funny, Julio. Like, obviously, so many content creators' books get recommended here, and you managed to find one I have not heard of. So
yes, yeah, I've never actually heard that being talked in your podcast. Yeah, I never heard it. Heard his name. Excuse me, I'm messing up my words.
So do you, after you play a game, so correct me if I'm wrong, I see you play some bullet here and there, probably when you're on the go, but a lot of daily chess. You also mentioned some people in your community helping out. So like, what role does chess play for you locally? Like, how much are you doing IRL as opposed to, on your computer and your phone?
Ooh. So what I'm doing in the chess community, I haven't started giving back or putting any platforms on for people to really express their characters with chess, but I've actually played in a lot of tournaments. I've played in a lot of clubs. So the first year when I really took chess seriously and moved away from chess.com, I joined a local chess club, and they used to play league games like during the week. And for the first year of playing chess over the board, I was at a tournament every single weekend from Friday to Sunday, and then during the week I'd be playing my league games. So for the first year of competing chess, I must have racked up over 500 games over the board. Yeah. So that was actually before I went to prison, because I went to prison in 2018. So between 2012 and 2017, I was competing in a lot of league chess club league games and tournaments, over the board tournaments, like 3-day long tournaments.
And do you mind saying what led you? You can be as vague or specific as you want, but what set of choices made you end up in prison?
Okay, so everything was motivated by money. The desire to have flashy things and stuff like that. So I decided to, you know, make my money illegally without harming anyone, although what I was selling probably was harming people. But, you know, we live and we learn. I did get caught, so I was growing lots of cannabis and selling lots of it. So I ended up going to prison for a few years because of that.
Just cannabis, or?
Yeah, so cannabis, cocaine, anything I could get my hands on, like I could sell it, I would get my hands on it and sell it.
Okay. So possibly when you were saying, like, earlier, how chess is like a prism, a prism where, like what you were saying about status in chess and wanting status in the world, it sounds like there's maybe a connection there, and that, like you said, you were trying to, you know, raise your financial status. So am I venturing too far with that comparison?
No. Status. I am. We all try and make money, right? But I don't think I could make money through chess. Well, there is lots of possibilities to make money through chess, but no, I think that would take away the love I have for the game if I was to involve finances with chess. But in terms of looking for finances elsewhere, I've been very business orientated. I guess I got the business skills from my drug dealing days, which now right. I can use now, which I have used in the legal world of business. And yeah. I ended up starting with my ex-partner a healthcare, a supported living health service. I never stayed with that business for too long. I ended up leaving. But in terms of status, how chess can help with that is it helps me with paying like attention to detail. Being able to analyze and evaluate things is a skill that, you know, I don't think I could have learned that skill from anywhere else, but chess has taught me. I've learned that through playing chess, is paying attention, close attention to detail, and having solid analysis and evaluation based on the information and based on my knowledge at the time as well.
That's great. And Julio, once you unfortunately were in prison, how long did you end up spending there?
I spent about 3 years in prison.
We'll be right back with more chess and life wisdom from Julio Calcina. And we are back. Did you get to play chess in prison
much? I did get to play a lot of chess in prison. Yeah, I actually, because I had a feeling that I was going to get sent to prison. So I packed all my chess books. I took lots of chess boards as well with me. So they let me go in with them. So I had a nice little library and good chess content. And I played a lot of chess in jail. So much chess. It's so crazy. I actually taught one of my friends to play chess whilst he was in there. And he's come out and he's still playing it. And he's actually pretty decent. He's got to about 1500 rating. And he's never read any books. He's just going on the knowledge that I've passed on to him. I used to play chess, believe it or not. I had a phone when I was in prison, and you're not allowed to have phones. But I managed to have a phone, so that's what kept me busy, especially at nighttime when they locked the doors. I'd go on my phone. I'd actually be playing correspondence chess with people on the outside because I've got bored with the annotations. My ex-partner as well, she played chess. In fact, yeah, she played chess quite a lot. She took it seriously because I played chess as well. So I used to send her text messages of like the moves that I'm making, and she'll send me a response back. So this is absolutely crazy because it got me so angry inside, because my ex-partner at the time, she's rated less than 1,000. And at the time when I went into prison, I was about 1,700. And she was absolutely like schooling me on that board. Like it got to a point where I looked at the board, like every move that I could possibly make is just suicide. I got so angry, I said to her, "You're cheating." She's like, no, I'm not cheating. And I swore blind to myself. I said, if she doesn't admit that she's cheated, I'm never going to speak to her again. I don't care. She can go to hell for all I care. Anyway, she admitted that she cheated. I was like, I knew it. I just knew it. Like, you cannot get me in such a position where every single move that I make is suicide. Like, you're not even 11, you're not even 1,000. Come on, I'm 1,700 and you're just wiping the floor off me. Like, no, that's not right. Like, it got me so worked up. I felt so much anger inside. But then again, it helped me look within myself. So that anger that I felt, it's a projection of something that's not nice. So I took it upon myself to really work on my anger issues, because before I went into prison, I used to be really angry. So I took it upon myself to work on my anger issues and not giving in to my emotions all the time. And it certainly helped. It helped so much. I actually started writing a journal when I was in prison. The journal was just a self-help book for myself, just to help me on a day-to-day basis. But I wrote over 1,000 pages, which I know I can publish it. Thanks to you again, Ben. The book that you that you recommended, The Man's Search for Meaning. I've listened to her. I got it on Audible, so I've listened to half of it already. And thank you so much.
Oh,
that
wow.
is actually amazing. The comparisons from him and my life, when he, obviously there's huge difference because he was in Auschwitz, but he wrote a journal, and I was like, oh, I've done the same. I've actually wrote a journal. So just to try and
That's
better
awesome.
Myself and find, you know, to find the positives in negative situations. So yeah, I actually did that. And thank you for that recommendation for the book.
Awesome. All right, a couple of things to follow up on. So number one, for listeners, Julio and I chatted for a few minutes just to get a sense for his story and to set up this interview a few days ago. And Julio mentioned he's starting a podcast. I know it had Search for Meaning in it. What's the tentative title, Julio?
It's called The Search for Meaning Podcast.
Yeah, The Search for Meaning. So I thought of this famous book by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning, about how he survived the concentration camps in Auschwitz. A very famous and incredible book. So I mentioned that and sent the rec to Julio. But Julio, I commend you for picking it up right away and digging in. It is a all-time classic book.
Very much so.
So getting back to there's so much to follow up on from that story. It was amazing. So the relationship, your ex-partner, I'm sorry that things didn't work out. And you had mentioned previously that chess played a role in some of your relationships not working out. So this cheating incident, was that connected to the ultimate demise of the relationship, or was that a different relationship?
No, that didn't add to us breaking up. We broke up because we just weren't compatible, not going forward, but we're still friends anyway. So yeah, the cheating, she owned up afterwards, and I had to look at myself before I made anything worse than what it was, because with anger, you know, you can say things that are just not great at all. So I took a look, I took a real good look at myself in the mirror and worked on my anger issues from then on.
So you mentioned journaling might have helped. Anything else that helped you, that you felt like made you turn a corner in terms of like, you know, stopping the triggers for when you might lose your temper?
Yeah, so philosophy, reading Stoic philosophy really helped me in that sort of sense.
Any particular recommendations? Or
Marcus Aurelius. That's like
nice,
my Bible.
Yeah.
Marcus Aurelius Meditations. And he highlights so much about the power of the mind and what you have and how you can control your response to any given situation. So I started learning and practicing that. And I'm still practicing it today.
Excellent. And so let's talk a little about your interests outside of chess. As we mentioned before, they might be connected. So to chess in some ways. So I'd like to start with a question from a Patreon supporter of the podcast, recent sub Fletcher Ray. Fletcher, thank you so much for helping to support Perpetual Chess. So Fletcher writes, he writes, as someone who plays chess and also trains Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I certainly understand the many comparisons between the two. However, with jiu-jitsu, if you train consistently, it's pretty much accepted that one will keep improving over time. They say a black belt is simply a white belt that never quit. Chess, however, feels completely different. You can play and study for long periods of time, even years sometimes, without seeing much improvement in rating. What do you think is the difference?
Okay, so the difference Okay, this is a very good question, right? I think the difference to improving in jiu-jitsu and not improving so much on chess would probably be your approach to learning. So with jiu-jitsu, like, we've got spaced repetition as well in jiu-jitsu, which helps with learning as well. Now we've got spaced repetition on chessable, like to learn how to play, to, you know, to learn the patterns to, so that we can improve. But if you're not improving as much in chess, then there's a problem in your approach to learning. Maybe you're not doing repetitive training techniques like spaced repetition, looking over the same information over and over again until it gets ingrained, just like the woodpecker method. Like the woodpecker method, it's absolutely magical how it helps you improve. So when I'm doing jiu-jitsu, when I'm training jiu-jitsu, the gym that I resonate with, their philosophy and approach to training, which I resonate a lot with, they use spaced repetition for you to improve. So they will isolate a position and you will drill that position until it becomes like second nature to yourself, until you can do it with your eyes closed. So if you can use that approach in chess, you will always improve. People talk about not being able to improve as an adult learner. Like it's really hard to improve as an adult learner. Maybe as an adult, this is my point of view. I think we've got too many biases in our heads that will hinder. You know, we are we limit ourselves through our limiting beliefs of our values and our perspective and approach to things. So yes, as an adult, you may hinder your own learning progress based on how you are as a person. But if you can be open to the fact that, okay, I'm an adult, but if I'm going to come to your class, I have to throw away all what I've known. I've just leave it at the door, or leave what I know at the door, and come in with an open mind, open mindset. And I think you learn, you'll be able to absorb more if you come in with that sort of a mindset, because I think we can always keep on improving. Even when you get to a really like an older age, like I've seen with like older grandmasters, you know, they've still got the capacity to learn, and you know, your brain is a muscle. So the more you keep training it, the more you'll have that muscle memory, and you know, you'll be able to notice patterns, recognize patterns a lot quicker. So again, it's about the consistency of how you're training in chess for you to be able to see an improvement. And again, you have to find out your learning style and what works for you, because everybody learns differently, and you just got to find what works for you. It's trial and error. So what worked for me was analyzing master games and doing tactics training. I never really worked on the opening much. The only work I've done on the openings in chess is understanding the principles of the opening, like bring your pieces out, at least develop your pieces, at least move them once in the development stage, get your king to safety, control the center. And then there's the middle game principles and so on. So the opening principles, that's all I learned about openings. I never really used to pick an opening and learn the theory, because then it's, again, memorization. I think it's good to learn a concept of something, and then you can, once you understand the concept of a principle, you can then use that in different positions, and you can be creative with it rather than memorizing moves of a certain opening. So yeah, what worked for me was analyzing master games and doing tactics, and end game theory is something that should never be left, because for me, that's where the beauty and the romanticism of chess is, you know, the end game when there's hardly any pieces on the board and it seems so simple, but it's so complex. It's like a whole different ocean altogether of things that could happen. So it's just beautiful. It's beautiful.
That's very poetic. I really enjoyed that. But I have to say, Julio, like, the fact of the matter is, like, people do hit plateaus in chess. Now, I don't know as much about jiu-jitsu and MMA, but just sort of thinking about it from the outside, my guess is, because I appreciate that you've had great progress, but obviously I know I've talked to a lot of people, myself included, who eventually they just hit a plateau, and it might be a conscious decision at some point where, like, maybe I could get better, but maybe I would have to spend, you know, 15, 20 hours a week for marginal improvement. And it just becomes not the best decision for how to spend the limited time that we have in life. But with jiu-jitsu, my impression thinking about it, again, from the outside looking in, is I really like what you said about space repetition of certain moves and sort of drilling certain micro skills. But in chess, I worry that the sheer quantity of micro skills might be much greater than the things that you might drill physically in jiu-jitsu. As someone who knows more about it than me, do you think that's fair or no?
Yes, that is a very fair point. And there's a huge difference compared to hitting a plateau in jiu-jitsu and then hitting a plateau in chess. So in jiu-jitsu, if you do hit a plateau, it's, you can actually go back to the drawing board and think and you know, reflect, reassess what's your physical appearance like, what's your body like, are you recovering well, are you resting well, maybe you need a bit of rest, maybe you need a bit of time off in order to come back and get past that plateau. But with chess, when you hit a plateau, there could be so many variable factors that could come into play, like for instance your frame of mind, like what's going on outside of chess, why are you hitting that plateau? So there could be many variables that could contribute to an adult hitting a plateau in their chess learning. There could be so many. It's so complex trying to find out why you've hit a plateau in chess compared to jiu-jitsu. In jiu-jitsu, it's more narrowed down. You can kind of, if with good reflection, proper reflection, you can pinpoint why your progress has slightly been hindered, or why you've hit a plateau. But again, with chess, okay, there's just too many variables to kind of pinpoint why you've hit that plateau. And again, when you were interviewing Abhimanyu, okay,
tough name,
so he did mention, if you hit a plateau or something's not right, it's mainly down to a skill set when it comes to chess.
Yeah. So certainly this ties in with the general advice that's given, that I quote Peter Giannatos in my book, like when you're at a plateau, you've got to keep changing your approach, like keep changing things until you try to see some progress. But I do think that, despite your optimism, Julio, I still think that inherently there's something different about chess that does. And again, it could be the sheer number of skills, or it could be the challenge in isolating the variables that actually impact performance in terms of training. You know, knowledge versus skills, as has been talked about many times. We'll be right back with more chess and life wisdom from Julio Calcina. And we are back. But we've got another MMA/chess-related question. So this is from Richard Burgess. And I'll read the whole message, but then some of them we've touched on already. So you can take this where you want. After I read what Richard wrote, thanks for helping to support Perpetual Chess, Richard. He writes, Julio, thank you for sharing your inspiring story with us and for your thoughts on chess. The connection between martial arts and chess is fascinating. Do you consider chess, so a few questions, do you consider chess a martial art in itself? He also wonders if you would speak to how to combine and balance your own martial arts training with chess. And he'd also be interested in whether you think martial arts schools should include chess training in their curriculum.
Okay, I may not remember all the questions. What's the first question? I know I forgot the first question already.
The first one is, do you consider chess a martial art in itself?
Yes, I personally do. So my perspective on that would be, yes, chess is psychological warfare. It's a battle of the mind. Instead of battling physically, you're actually using the muscle up in your head. So yes, in all senses, could it be a martial art? Now, that's a... Yeah, again, maybe I take back my answer by saying yes, it is. Maybe it's debatable whether it could be a martial art. But in terms of skills that go towards a martial art, chess can give you skills that can help you in martial arts. That's for sure.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And how do you combine, so Richard's second question, how do you combine and balance your MMA training with chess?
How do I combine and balance? Okay, so the way I combine my chess with jiu-jitsu, again, it depends on your character and how your personality is as an individual on the mats doing jiu-jitsu and on the chessboard. It's very relatable because on the chessboard, I'll use myself as an example. I love to play gambits. I used to love open positions and just sacrificing material. Basically, I'm just a big, massive risk taker. So that is actually mirrored in my jiu-jitsu on the mats, because I take bold risks. I give away bad positions, like I'm throwing away pawns in a gambit, and I get myself in sticky situations, but it's by choice, because I know once I get into a bad position, I can reverse it. Not all the time, but psychologically, when a person feels like he's winning and he's dominating, something happens psychologically in their brains. They tend to relax a little bit. And that's the time when I can assert my dominance and reverse the situation and put him on his back. So a lot of psychology comes into play, especially on the board. Like, I'll give away so many pieces and get myself in crazy, horrible positions, but the way I navigate out of them, like, it baffles my opponents. Sometimes they call me a cheater. I've been called a cheater so many times, but there's no cheating there. So yeah, psychologically,
this is a cheater in jiu-jitsu, or
no, I was on about chess. Sorry.
Okay.
You can get cheaters in jiu-jitsu. They call them sandbaggers.
They have that in chess.
Yeah, we've got sandbaggers in chess. I've been called a sandbagger too as well. so many times. So yeah, the way your character shows, or your personality does get shown on the board as well as, well, for me, on the mats as well. So me liking to play open positions, gambits, and taking risks, it's also evident the way I roll, the way I hold myself as a person, hence why I'd been to prison a long time ago and stuff like that, because I just take too many risks. And my personality and my character is shown on the chessboard, and it's shown on the mats as well when I'm doing jiu-jitsu. But yeah, psychologically, I like to lead people into a false sense of security where they think that they're doing so amazing against me, and then before you know it, the tables have turned. I can't remember which chess player said it, but he likes, from the opening, he likes to, in the middle game, he likes to create lots of chaos, that where the only moves, responses, the response to the chaos is so narrow that for you to find the right move is so slim. So to navigate out of the chaos is what I strive for. Like, I love to, when I'm playing chess, I'll make an opening, but then I'll make really moves that are not book moves, and it throws off my opponents. And getting to a middle game, it's all chaos. It just, there's so much going on, but I like to navigate through that chaos. There's some sort of order in the chaos. Even when I'm on the mats doing jiu-jitsu, again, I'll put myself in bad situations and my opponents think that, oh, they've got it, they've got the choke on. I know how to defend chokes. I like, obviously, I still get choked out, but there's some sort of euphoric feeling as well when you nearly get put to sleep, and they're like, I like that as well, which can sound a bit strange, you know.
Yeah, the quote you might be thinking of is Mikhail Tal's, you must take your opponent into a deep, dark forest. That's where 2 plus 2 equals 5, and the path leading out is only wide enough for one.
That's the one.
One of the all-time chess quotes, for sure. All right, we have one more Patreon question relating to a different facet of your work. This one's from Gerard T. Hart. Thanks for helping support Perpetual Chess, Gerard. He writes, I wonder what your advice is regarding exercise, especially weight training in chess. Is it better than cardiovascular, or should a combination be recommended? He also notes that he thinks it's essential to promote chess for people suffering from mental health problems. Do you offer clients chess as well? Gerard writes, it helped me cope with ADHD, and he's noticed that children with learning disabilities also can benefit from chess.
Sorry, can you repeat the first part of the question, please?
Sure. So the first part had to do with physical exercise.
Okay, like, right. Let me carry on from there. I remember it now. So I think it's very important to do weights and cardio, because I'm definitely living proof. Plus, a lot of chess players will back me up on this. But physical training will increase your resilience to be able to endure really long games. Yeah. So a mixture of weights and cardio is definitely a must. Definitely a must. I know Kanti, he does a lot of weights. That works for him. But then again, you got to find what works for you as an individual, because we're all slightly different. We're different, the way we, what makes us tick. We're all different. So you got to find what works for yourself. And in terms of how chess can help people with mental health issues, it's a saving grace. I would certainly say for myself, I've also suffered mental health issues, but whether I knew it at the time, I didn't know. But you know, my behaviors spoke out volumes. But whether I had the calmness and stillness in my mind to really stop and pay attention, it was hard at the time. But chess really does help with people suffering with any sort of mental health issues, because it, you know, focusing in on something really brings your mind back into the moment, and it stops you from all the noise that's, you know, clouding your mind and clouding your judgment. And you know, people talk about meditation, and when you meditate, you're actually focusing on say one point, or focusing on your breath, so you're working on focus. So playing chess can be a form of meditation, because it's bringing you back into the moment. When you have mental health issues, depending on what it is, your mind is just full of, it's full of clouded judgments and making you feel anxious about the future, depressed about the past. But chess brings you right back into the moment, right in the moment. So in terms of helping with any sort of mental issues, yes, it can definitely play a good part in your recovery, in your healing. So yeah, chess and exercise definitely go hand in hand, because again, your body is a muscle. We know your body is a vessel. You have to look after your body, and your mind is a muscle as well. It needs just as much training. So I've heard, I can't remember where I heard this from, but I've heard that chess, you know, training your brain will decrease your likelihood of getting Alzheimer's and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, so there's a lot of benefits, and I would love to help in any sort of way for anyone. Like, it's helped me, and I'd like to help and give back.
That's wonderful to hear. Julio, if you don't mind, I'd like to hear a bit more about what the chess culture was like in prison, just because I've gotten a few emails from people in the prisons. Here in the U.S., I got to interview a guy named Tony Ballard a few years back who has an amazing story. Yeah, like, awesome guy. Shout out to Tony. But it's hard to get reports of, like, what you mentioned, having a phone and getting to play online while you were in prison. But what was the actual, like, playing against other players and the chess culture like there?
Right. The chess culture in prison, I found it's on par with the chess community outside. If there's any difference that I could mention about the community of the chess community in prison and chess community outside, the chess communities in prison, it brings everyone together. In a sense that, okay, in regards to, say, for example, you've got your mass murderers who've murdered so many people, and then and then you've got somebody who's coming to prison for just like stealing in a shop or something, and these two types of people, they usually wouldn't cross paths in prison or even talk to each other. And you've got your introverted people that don't talk to anybody, and then you've got your extroverted, like, big gangsters and stuff. And how it brings people together, it's beautiful to watch. It's beautiful to witness, because to see a big time gangster, mass murderer, you know, giving help to somebody who's so introverted, and this person who's introverted was so scared to go talk to this person, or even just even to look at that person. But now you see these two people are talking, and you know, the exchange that's going on there is that the introverted person, his confidence and self-esteem actually grows so much because of that acceptance and that sense of belonging and being a part of a community where you're not getting judged for who you are as a person, but you're getting looked at for the skills that you bring to the table. And even if you're not bringing skills that are like really amazing skills, people are happy to help. You know, there's a thing where they say men are scared to ask for help and stuff like that, but people are willing to give help, and they're just waiting for you to ask for help. And yeah, so in terms of community wise and bringing people together, like, it was beautiful to witness and to see people growing as individuals within themselves, you know, considering they're in such a bad place, and you know, it's just demoralizing having your freedom taken away from you like that. But then seeing a positive benefit like that, and seeing somebody's face change and smile, and you see their face light up because of the sheer excitement, the acceptance of being accepted into such a environment with people that wouldn't usually cross paths. So that's beautiful. And the chess community outside, like, you know, back in the normal community, not in prison, you know, again, there's people that just want to help each other. And again, the chess community outside is just involved. Lots of alcohol gets involved.
I think in England in particular, I feel like it's part of the culture, drinking and chess. Yeah,
drinking and playing chess was like, that's how I kind of like, that was my introduction into the chess community, like playing over the board chess and going to tournaments. Everybody would just be drinking. And I think I actually became borderline alcoholic from all this, because I used to associate playing chess with drinking whiskey and just getting off my face. And there was a time, actually, sorry to I'm going to change this. This is a story worth telling, but I played a chess congress, 5 games over 3 days in a place called Wakefield, and I lost all my games. I got an Audi, all zeros. So I lost all 5 games. But it was okay. So the following weekend, I booked another chess congress over 3 days again. And the person that I lost to the week before is really, you know, it's not great to judge, but I just thought I was going to beat him. And that was my fault as well. Like, I just thought I'm going to beat this guy. It's going to be an easy game. But it turned out he absolutely beat me. And like, it was an embarrassing loss. Anyway, the following weekend, I went to play a different congress. Unfortunately, I had a bad toothache. And because I had a toothache, I lived in Manchester at the time. So I was driving to Bradford for this chess congress. I was so drunk throughout the whole chess congress because of this toothache that I had. Like, it was so bad. I was going down, buying little bottles of vodka, like downing the bottle of vodka and going back to the board and playing games. And I actually won 4 out of 5 games. And I got to play the same guy that I lost to the week before, and I got to play him on round 5. And I said to myself, I'm gonna go. I didn't know who I was playing, but on the lunch break, I just told my friend, like, I'm going in. I'm gonna win this game. I'm gonna play so aggressive, and which I did. I did play very aggressive. I won his queen by move 8, and there's a whole crowd of people gathered around us because people were surprised that this person was losing. So yeah, I was lucky to win that game. But the main part of the story which I wanted to tell was based on alcohol, like, and I had a toothache. Because I was in a different town, different city altogether, I didn't want to drive all the way back to Manchester to drive back in the morning for my game of chess. So I asked a friend of mine if I could stay at their house. In fact, this was actually an ex-partner. And because I had a toothache, anyway, she said yeah. So I went round. And she kicked me out within about an hour. I was so drunk, I completely forgot. And I completely lost consciousness that night. And I woke up in the morning at my house in Manchester. So when she kicked me out, I was so drunk. I've obviously driven my car back to Manchester. I had no recollection whatsoever. All I remember was waking up in the morning and I'm back at home with a bottle of wine at this bedside. And I had about 45 minutes to get to Bradford to play my next game. So I woke up, swigged that bottle of wine, hit my car, straight to the congress, and oh God. Yeah, so alcohol and chess, it's not really a good combination.
Well, I gotta say, Julio, I don't approve of this drunk driving. That's dangerous. We don't want you to end up back in jail, man.
Yeah, so that was who I was back then, just a risk taker. And just didn't. Yeah, I was just stupid. Like, looking back, it was so stupid. So I'm very humbled with myself and grateful that I'm still here to tell the tale.
And then no one else got hurt along the way.
Yeah, nobody else got hurt along the way, exactly. Yeah, I would never advise anyone to do such things. Like, it was stupid from my part. But we live to learn to live.
We'll be right back with more chess and life wisdom from Julio Calcina. And we are back. And are you still playing OTB these days?
I haven't played OTB last year. I played the year before. I'm actually looking to start playing again this year and try and get my rating to cross 2,000 over the board rating. So my current rating, when I came out of prison, I was about 1,300 over the board, my FIDE rating. And I did play a few tournaments. I played quite a few games, and I got my rating up to 1,882 FIDE.
That's awesome. Wow. How strong were were you the strongest player in your prison, or was there anyone that could beat you?
Yeah, I was the strongest where I was, because you can't go to every part of the prison. I was the strongest on my wing, on the cell block. I did come across a guy who actually beat me. But then again, this again was, you know, when you underestimate your opponent and you think, oh, this is going to be easy, it's going to be a walkover, you're actually shooting yourself in the foot because you're not going to play your strongest moves. Compared to if I knew I was playing like a grandmaster or something, I would then, you know, consider, you know, take every move seriously. But yeah, I underestimated my opponent once. I got beat. Then again, I had to look at my frame of mind when I went into the game and trying to see where I had weaknesses and what made me lose the game. What was my outlook towards the game that made me lose the game like I did? And it turned out that I used to underestimate my opponents. So I'd just look at them, size them up and think, oh yeah, I'll beat you, you'll be easy. But that's the wrong approach to have. I think nowadays when I'm playing against somebody, regardless of their rating or their you know, their skill, I will always take it seriously. Never underestimate anyone or anything.
That's another good, like, good chess advice, but good life advice as well.
Another thing that helped me is, whilst playing chess, is to really be in the moment and enjoy the journey, enjoy the process rather than the outcome. Because I found that myself, when I used to think of the outcome, even during a game whilst I'm playing, even yesterday I did it, like, you got to like midway through the game and I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm gonna beat this guy. Like, no, that's removing me from the moment and enjoying the process, which now it removed me from that moment. Now I'm thinking of the outcome, and then which, in because of that, it allowed me not to make the best decisions, the best moves. So again, it's just about adapting and just tweaking little things, especially if within your mind and your approach. And yeah,
I love it. Well, this has been amazing, Julio. Such a great story, and it's inspiring how you've picked yourself up, improved your life choices, and improved your game immensely over the years as well. So I know you've got your hands in various content projects. Like, what's next for you? Like, what are your 2024 priorities?
2024 is to compete a lot more in chess, compete in jiu-jitsu tournaments, and work on my podcast.
Yeah. So when is it launched yet?
So it's launching end of January. So yeah, the search for meaning, it came about through my love for chess, jiu-jitsu, and philosophy, because there's a lot of things that you can learn in whatever field you're in that you can apply to life. So I'm just hearing people's stories of how they've got to where they've got to and how they find purpose and meaning in their life.
So it's going to be an interview podcast?
Yeah, it's going to be interview podcast. So I'll be hosting it. And
great. Well, I'll definitely, I'll put the link in when it's launched. But in the meantime, I know you've done some Twitch streaming here and there. Is that on the back burner for now, or are you going to get back?
No, the chess, the streaming, it kind of slacked off a little bit, but I do tend to be streaming at least once a week, every Sunday, just playing a friendly tournament with the friends of mine, friends from all around the world. Anyone can join in. But yeah, if anyone wants to find me or message me anywhere, you can catch me on Instagram, which is Julio PDC. I've got my Facebook as well, which is Julio Calcina. And my Twitch is Julio Calcina as well.
Okay, and you got a Lee Chess too, right?
I've got a Lee Chess. Lee Chess and chess.com. My handles are Calcina.
Okay, so I'll link to all that stuff so anyone doesn't have to chase it down. Just scroll down. By the way, I know that sometimes in Apple Podcasts, this is something for you to know for when your pod launches, Julio. Like, I have these epic show descriptions with all these notes. And most of the podcast apps will include all the notes. But okay. Apple Podcasts, they're like, enough already. So at some point they just stop. So if anyone's on Apple Podcasts and like the notes are cut off, you can always go to the Perpetual Chess webpage to get any links or to get like the contact info for someone like Julio. That's the backup if you have any issues. But Julio, been fantastic to hear your story. Any parting advice or goodbye messages for our listeners?
If I was to give anybody advice, what advice would I give to myself? Master your emotions if you want to master your reality. Just short and sweet. Master your emotions if you want to master your reality. If you want to live your best life, you know, learn to regulate your emotions. And that's what's helped me in a lot of things, especially in chess. You can't let your emotions take over, because that will just make you make bad decisions. So yeah.
Fantastic.
Master your emotions and you'll master your reality.
Love it. I can't wait for your podcast, man. I'm excited to check it out.
Oh, and thank you, Ben.
And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Podcast Network.